Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Brian Fengler is the co-founder and chief medical officer of Evidence Care. He empowers clinicians to make better care decisions by improving clinical workflows using their EHR integrated and content agnostic platform. After finishing his residency at the University of Virginia Health System in 2008, Dr. Fengler moved to Nashville, where he began his practice in the emergency department of St. Thomas Health System. He was also a founding physician and managing director of Physicians Urgent Care and a partner owner of Middle Tennessee Emergency Partners Physicians Group. Dr. Fengler received his medical degree from the State University of New York. He is also a frequent host of the Better Care podcast. Hello, Dr. Fengler, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Appreciate you having me on.
Dr. Fengler, I know many of my audience members are meeting you for the first time or listening to you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I'm an emergency medicine physician. Going way back, I grew up in Syracuse, New York. My mother was a nurse. My father was a teacher. Always wondered if I would go into education or healthcare. Ended up going into medicine and did my residency in emergency medicine at the University of Virginia. Loved my time there. Moved on from Virginia and moved to Nashville about 15 years ago. Started working for an emergency room group here in Nashville. And through my experiences in the emergency department, and I was also involved in opening up several urgent care clinics here in Nashville, just realized the care gap that exists in healthcare. And, the way that, every physician and nurse wants to practice the best medicine, but it's evolving so quickly. And so it was through that understanding and that passion that I started Evidence Care. So I'm a co-founder of Evidence Care, and I serve as our chief medical officer. And our mission at Evidence Care is to help bring evidence-based medicine into physician and nurses' workflows so that they can deliver better care and have better outcomes for their patients.
And Brian, Evidence Care is really, I hate sounding like a radio DJ, but like it is burning up the charts. Like I'm taking a look at some of the things that your company has done in the last few years. I mean, I know that your company started around 2014. As you said, yeah. You guys are based out of Tennessee. But you know, the way that you are, the origin story of your company is really remarkable. I was reading about how you as a subject matter expert on pulmonary embolism had written this protocol. And then, you know, as the expert, you were suddenly faced with a situation where you have a pregnant woman, I believe she was around 36 weeks, facing mm-hmm. this exact same scenario, and you did not have the tools and the information needed to make a decision at a critical critical juncture. And so, you know, over the course of time, you and your company have designed a lot of these evidence-based clinical decision support systems and services that now integrate with EHR. And Brian, some of the partnerships and the relationships that your company has built are really impressive. We're talking Ardent Health, Bon Secours Mercy Health, Intermountain Healthcare, Moffitt Cancer Center, and the partnerships that you have with both Epic and Oracle for their Cerner EHR is very impressive. And I'd also encourage my audience members and listeners today to understand that EvidenceCare is actually not just, you know, doing great work in the healthcare space. They're being recognized by some very large organizations. So very recently, I know that EvidenceCare was named as one of Inc. 5000's fastest growing companies in 2022. And you also won two of Fierce Healthcare's Innovation Awards, right? One was for clinical information management, and the other one was for best new product. These are not minor achievements or, you know, minor blips. Like, these are very indicative of a strong company that has an intense mission, and it's delivering on its promise. And so that was one of the reasons why we wanted to have you come on the show and talk a little bit about this, because I know that in my conversations with other healthcare providers, I'm a pharmacist by trade, but I speak with a lot of nurses and doctors, and they do face this challenge, right? Like, they're working on an EHR that, you know, is a disparate system entirely. And here they are, you know, spending the bulk of their time having to, you know, enter all of these, inputs, and yet they're not able to get the outputs that they need. Brian, why don't you share with us a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you and EvidenceCare are focusing on today? I do know that very recently you added two members to your board, and you certainly would love for you to talk about that as well. But I think it's more important for the audience to hear a little bit more about, like, where EvidenceCare is leading, right? Like, you have these amazing partnerships. Talk to us a little bit about some of the great results that have come through some of these relationships and partnerships. We'd love to hear that story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we have been around since 2014, but we've really hit our stride now over the last 3 years. I think we finally figured out as a company and as a team what the market was looking for. We started off as a clinical pathways company. That was my passion for bringing evidence-based medicine into clinicians' workflow. And as we got deeper in that, and as we started building, I call it plumbing, into the EHRs, we started realizing that not only could we deliver, clinical pathways, but we could also build additional ancillary tools with that same plumbing, with those same connections into the EHRs. And so we have made a little bit of a pivot. The healthcare industry is really facing some headwinds, coming out of COVID, and every health system is struggling with margins, with cost of care. And we've realized that we can deliver clinical tools that can not only drive better patient outcomes, but also have operational advantages, decrease a patient's length of stay in the hospital, decrease unwarranted utilization around imaging and labs and medications. And all of those things add up to the patient receiving better care, the patient having less exposure to harmful care, because we know we do more, we cause more harm, but also having those, financial impact and benefits to the health system. And so today, when we walk into a health system, we have tools that the clinicians want to use, that are easy to integrate from an IT perspective, that have operational benefits from a quality of care and throughput and length of stay, and that check the boxes for the financial folks in terms of we're going to have a strong ROI for them and be a product that helps add to their margins and not be an additional budgetary cost item that has no return on investment.
Yeah, and that's important. I talk to a lot of executives today, particularly at the C-suite level, that are in these rooms, and they're trying to make decisions that are beneficial for every individual and every group that's involved, right? So you mentioned patients. You've also talked about ensuring that healthcare providers feel that their voices are being heard and that they have the tools and the training to be able to work with them, right? And I think that that's a big gap. You know, sometimes you see that while there are organizations that provide training for their support or for their process or for their tool, it's still labor intensive and it's not intuitive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to hear that that's something that you've been able to find success with your clients and with other partners as well. You mentioned that, you know, a lot of organizations, especially across the healthcare industry, are still struggling following a post, now operating in a post-pandemic world or a post-COVID world, you know, and obviously finance is one, right? Like, are there other challenges that you hear repeatedly when you're having discussions with CEOs, CMOs, CIOs, and then trying to help them bridge those gaps with some of the services that Evidence Care provides?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just checking off the list of health system initiatives, and this is across the board. I think every health system is struggling with workforce, you know, and the increased cost of workforce, but also finding the workforce. As many people, you know, through COVID and post COVID have left healthcare and are going and pursuing careers in other areas. So every health system is struggling with workforce. Physicians and nurses are burned out. You know, they made it through COVID, but they probably still haven't fully recovered. And now they have a system that's strained and has those workforce challenges. And so everybody, you know, is working harder than they have ever before. You know, cost of care have gone up from just a supply perspective. Mm-hmm. But on the same hand, reimbursement has not gone up, you know. So obviously the government needs to fix that at some point in terms of Medicare reimbursement rates. And, you know, we saw the same reimbursement from a Medicare perspective that we had 15 years ago. Yeah. And so it's this, you know, the struggle is they got to do more with less. And I really think that that's where the opportunity comes in with technology, because I think everybody can acknowledge that with technology, we can help people do their job easier. We can make people more efficient, you know, so that they're not having to have as many resources and FTEs to do the same job anymore. And, you know, obviously when it comes to the clinical care of patients, you know, we know more today than we did yesterday and the month before and 5 years ago. And so our care of patients is getting better and better, but we have to disseminate that information to the frontline clinicians, get it within their workflow, because the scary statistic in healthcare is that the average physician is 7 to 10 years behind the guidelines. And so as medicine is evolving and as the evidence is evolving, we need to help clinicians, you know, in their workflow, because they don't have time to, you know, read for 5 hours a day to keep up with all this. And the studies actually show they would have to read for 160 hours per week just to keep up with the evidence in their specialty alone. So obviously not feasible.
Right.
And so that's where technology comes in. And that's where we can enhance the patient experience. We can make patients more sticky to a health system, because once they engage that patient from a consumer perspective and the patient has access to their medical records and can book appointments online and can do virtual consults, well, now that's going to be a patient for life for that health system. Right. And if we can then help the physicians deliver better care to those patients, have better outcomes, you know, clinically and operationally, then at the end of the day, we're going to help make that health system more profitable and help them fulfill their mission of caring for their community.
I want to touch on that really quick, Brian, because I find that my own experience, both as a patient and as a caregiver with two separate health systems, is like, it's like the tale of two cities, right? So my wife and I go, and we've been patients of a particular hospital that is now part of a larger system. And the integration as a patient has just been remarkable. Like, I have access to all of my labs, every visit I've ever had with my primary, and every ancillary visit I've ever had. And I get to see that, right, as a patient. Now, when I have to work with my parents, you know, they have a different health system. And the every individual provider, now these are 80-year-olds, right? So my mom is 80. I won't say their name. I won't say their exact age, but they are over 80, right? And each one of them has a series of specialists and, you know, several two individual primaries. And nobody talks to each other, let alone the patient. And everything is still through phone and fax, which is mind-blowing today as a patient, right? Or as a caregiver. Now, as a provider, I can only imagine the level of frustration where you are sitting here as a primary care physician trying to integrate other specialists that are, you know, seeing your patient and working through their processes and making decisions that you as a primary care may not be involved in, but then having to follow up on. And as you said, 160 hours a week of additional research just to stay on top of the changes. You know, it's obviously it's impossible, right? And I'm glad to know that, you know, knowing that a service and a company like yours is shortening that gap has to be a sigh of relief for many of the providers. What feedback have you received from providers that have used your product? And, you know, how have you been able to, A, build upon the things that they have said, you know, Brian, you have to keep this, I mean, or build on this, make it better, or even, you know, on the flip side, like we are all looking to improve. What feedback have you received that you may not have been aware of, or your team may not have been aware of, that once you got the feedback, you said, look, this is important, and we're going to try to fix this today?
Yeah. So it's a great question. And you know, going back to my previous comments, so I mean, digital health is the future. Digital health is how we're going to help you know, bridge that gap, and it helps health systems and the industry overcome those headwinds. But digital health is really broad, you know, and I mentioned consumer, you know, certainly there's a lot of, you know, revenue cycle things, you know, where Evidence Care has focused. And obviously that's a challenge as an early stage company, staying focused, because there are so many opportunities. But where we've really narrowed our focus is on that physician's interaction with the patient and that point in time where that patient is going to be admitted to the hospital. And so we're not dealing in the ambulatory space. We're not dealing in post-acute. We're not dealing in primary care. You know, we're really looking at when patients need to come into the hospital, how can we help the physicians deliver better care in that setting? And how can we drive improvements and outcomes there? So a little bit deeper on, you know, some of our products. So we have a whole suite of products. You know, we've built them on a platform that when we go into a health system, whether they're on Epic or Oracle Cerner or Meditech, we can integrate our platform once. And then if that health system wants to use any of our tools, they can use those. And the ones that we've been having the most success with coming out of COVID, I'll mention both of them briefly. The first one is called Admission Care.
Okay.
And this is a tool that this like little known situation in healthcare is when a patient gets hospitalized, it is the physician's requirement to determine if that patient meets what's called inpatient status or observation status. And all of this originated because of health insurance companies, you know, trying to pay as little as possible, of course. So it is the physician who's required to make that determination. And it is the physician who is required to document in the medical record why they think that that bed status is the right bed status for the patient. Mm-hmm. And that's going to drive reimbursement back to the health system for that patient's hospitalization. Well, we physicians are the worst people to be doing that because we don't get any training in medical school. We don't get any training in residency. And there's a 500-page book, you know, that has all of the criteria. And we certainly can't keep up with that, which, you know, updates every year. And so one of the tools that we built called Admission Care, we've integrated directly into the physician's workflow. And at the time of admission decision, we surface that criteria and we help them in 30 seconds determine the appropriate bed status for that patient and have the payer compliant documentation go back into their clinical note. So we're saving them time documenting. We're reducing the amount of calls that they get back from their revenue cycle and billing people on the back end. Cause you know, half the time, if they get it wrong, you know, they got to fix it later. And of course, those are interruptions and distractions from patient care activities. And so those are very frustrating. And so that tool is helping us help clinicians and physicians get the patients in the right bed status. And why that's important is it's going to assure proper reimbursement for the health system for the care that they're going to deliver to that patient. But also, if we don't get that bed status right, the patient could end up having to pay more out of pocket. And so it ends up becoming also a patient satisfaction issue and topic. So that's one of our tools. And coming out of COVID, you know, every health system again struggling with revenue. Mm-hmm. And so this is a tool that we're showing, you know, dramatic improvements in revenue capture for the health system, easier workflow for the physicians, because better to do something right the first time than have to do rework and be interrupted later on and have more administrative burden coming back to them on the back end. So we're having a ton of success with that tool. The other tool is we almost think of it as the other side of the coin, is called Care Gauge. And where that tool comes in is once the patient is hospitalized, you know, there is a wide variation of utilization of care for patients who get admitted with the same condition. And so you'll take 10 patients with the same condition getting admitted at different hospitals, and there will be wide variation in utilization of imaging, labs, medications. And so what we've done is we've created benchmarks for what appropriate utilization would be for a patient with every DRG, every condition that they would be admitted to the hospital for. And we give the physicians real-time feedback in the EHR as to where that patient is on their care journey. We do this with simple gauges. That's why we call it Care Gauge. And those gauges, you know, just like your gas gauge in your car, your speedometer, super easy to use. Nobody needs any training on them, you know, because everybody understands green, yellow, red. But what it does is it gives the physicians a sense of where that patient is. And so if imaging goes into the red, the physician might say, well, what happened here? Why did, you know, and they could review it and they can see, you know, where overutilization of care might have occurred. And what happens with this tool over time is the physicians start to become more cognizant of where there are opportunities to reduce overutilization, cost, and, you know, potential harm to patients, because patients in the hospital for 5 days and every day we draw blood work on them, mm-hmm. we're poking their arm, we're drawing blood. There's potential for, you know, infection. If we're getting imaging on them, we're exposing them to radiation. And so all of this is, you know, delivering better quality care to the patient. But on the back end, we're also reducing costs for the health system. And our, you know, ROI there has been off the charts. And again, if we're in an environment where revenue is going to be fixed, the only way the health systems are going to, you know, maintain profitability is if they address that cost of care issue. And it starts with the physicians. 80% of the costs at a hospital are controlled by, used to be the pen of an ordering physician, but now it's the mouse clicks. And so we have to give physicians the tools to help them make better decisions. And the reality is they want to. Every physician wants to deliver high quality care. Every physician wants to be good stewards of healthcare resources because they understand the constraints of the industry. And so what happens is when we empower physicians, when we put them back in the driver's seat, they love it and they thrive and they do better for their patients and they do better for their health systems.
Brian, if somebody wanted to see what that looked like, is there something available for them to go and just kind of, you know, 2 a.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. and they're like, I want to see what this sounds like or looks like, because it sounds great. I mean, I want to know where could I go to see something like this?
Yeah, you know, the easiest place is definitely our website, you know, just it's evidence.care. And from there, you know, there's product pages where they could, you know, see what admission care looks like, see what Care Gauge looks like, see what our clinical pathways that we've partnered with Moffitt Cancer Center and Intermountain to develop, you know, take their clinical content and build into cancer pathways. And build into pathways with Intermountain that look at what is appropriate utilization of imaging. You know, does this patient, you know, should this patient get this CT scan or MRI based on, you know, what clinical criteria they have? And so, the best place to go would be our website.
That sounds brilliant. And I will definitely go check it out. And I encourage all my listeners to do that as well. Brian, you know, when you are at this point where you're able to see all of the gaps in delivery of evidence care, you know, across the spectrum, and you're probably speaking with other colleagues that are also like-minded, like you, I'm sure you guys coalesce And you see that while we are in this dire situation today, there are changes that are still coming that we should be prepared for. And I'd love to know what some of your insights are as you think about what the future of evidence-based care looks like in 3 or 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're all dealing with the problems that we are today, right? And to be very fair and honest, many organizations are struggling to be able to keep up pace. But we're also trying to be prepared for what's to come. Brian, what do you see that's coming down the pike that we as healthcare providers and executives should be aware of so that we're not caught off guard?
Yeah, you know, the easiest one is AI is coming very quickly. And definitely there needs to be caution there. But it is coming quickly. And I truly believe that that is going to help catalyze some of the change that is needed. Healthcare is a very slow industry to adapt. As you mentioned with your family, you know, still dealing with fax and phone calls. But the reality is to be a high quality and leading health system, you know, these health systems are going to have to change the way that they change. You know, they're going to have to evolve faster, and their processes that, you know, where that moved very slow previously, they're going to have to learn how to adapt faster. Part of that is going to end up being consolidation within the industry, and it's already happened a ton over the last 3 years. But you know, there's about 500 health systems today. Oh, wow. Most folks think in 5 years there'll probably only be 200 or 300 health systems.
So 60% reduction is a possibility.
And we've seen it already with some of the largest health systems. Yeah. You know, we just saw Atrium Health and Advocate Aurora, yeah, which already Advocate Aurora was the combination of Advocate and Aurora. you know, so already you had these two massive systems, and now they've come together. Mm-hmm. And I think what's going to happen is, you know, the standalone hospitals are going to have to consolidate, yes, whether that's with a regional, you know, health system, or whether that's with a national health system, because they're going to realize that they just don't have, you know, the leadership, the change management ability, the lens and scope of what's happening in healthcare and how things are evolving so quickly,
right,
to be able to keep up. And I think it is a good thing, because what's going to happen is you're going to get best practices disseminated faster. You're going to have those leading health systems really being able to drive operational improvements. And when you do all that, you're helping the doctors and the nurses take better care of their patients. A patient shouldn't go into a small rural standalone hospital and get less or lower quality care than they would receive if they went 2 hours away to a larger facility. It shouldn't happen today in our information age. And so I think that that's going to be a big piece, that consolidation, and I think it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, it takes a lot of courage to bring that out into the open, right? But it is, I mean, it's indicative of what the pattern has been now. And you mentioned Advocate Aurora and Atrium, right? So I have about 14 different Advocate Aurora hospitals around me. And when we heard the news, it was like, well, you know, this is like a Wisconsin, Illinois, and a South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia-based org. Like, how are they making this possible? But you're right, that is the trend. And you are 100% right. Like, patient care should not suffer regardless of where you are in this country, rural, urban, you know, it does not matter, because what we're finding is that those standalone hospitals are just not able to bring the quality to the patient because of the lack of resources, whether it's manpower, money, reimbursement, and a variety of other factors. So, you know, again, Brian, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, I feel it. I think a lot of my colleagues feel that. And we're sort of like on the head fence, like, is this just a blip? But in reality, especially with AI and ML, you know, leading in so many new ways, and really just when you think about disruption, that is like the largest disruptor we've probably ever encountered so far in human history. And I think that most people need to be aware of that, so that they're able to, you know, pivot in whichever way they may think is appropriate. Brian, we've talked a lot about, you know, the state of healthcare and how evidence care is stepping in to be able to solve a lot of these. I'd like to pivot away a little bit from evidence care and talk more about you. I mean, you've had a brilliant career, you know, and I've seen so many of the great things that you've been doing. Obviously, today you are both the co-founder and chief medical officer at Evidence Care. Before this, you were a managing partner at Physicians Urgent Care. Prior to that, you were an assistant professor of emergency medicine at Middle Tennessee Emerging Physicians. And you've seen a lot. You've had great opportunities presented to you, or you know, have explored them on your own. But you know, something was born inside of you to lead this company, right? And I'd like for you to share a little bit more about that origin story I mentioned earlier in our show, because I think it's pivotal that listeners understand how, you know, how Evidence Care came to be, and why you chose to start something instead of, you know, taking the safe route, right? You know, I know a lot of people want to be great, but safe at the same time. And sometimes as an entrepreneur, we both know that that's not as easy. So Brian, share with us a little bit about the origin of Evidence Care, you know, how that moment in time changed you and why you said this was the right path for you.
Yeah. Love it. So I'm gonna go back even earlier. I know I mentioned earlier where I grew up and my parents. So back to that, you know, I'm in college and you know, I have exposure to the healthcare industry. My mother was a nurse, my father was a teacher and a basketball coach, and I could really see both, you know, going down either one of those paths and having a great life and enjoying what I do. When I was a sophomore in college, my older brother came down with his second bout of cancer. He had cancer when I was, you know, in high school, went through a year of treatment, beat it, was in remission. But then cancer actually came back again. When I was a sophomore in college, you know, I would spend every other weekend, I would go from upstate New York, where I went to college, to visit my brother in Boston, where he was undergoing treatment at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And my brother ended up, you know, passing away from cancer. And that, you know, situation and that moment, and I went back to college and was, you know, with my friends and, you know, talking about it, you know, just said like, I got to do this. I'll never regret, you know, going full steam into medicine. After one night talking with my friends about it, I signed up for the MCATs the next day. And, you know, that's how everything started. Mm-hmm. You know, from there, you know, obviously went through medical school and went to residency at University of Virginia. Sort of the origin story on Evidence Care. When I was at the University of Virginia, a man presented with a massive blood clot in his lungs or pulmonary embolism. And we in the emergency room had assessed the patient and, you know, determined that we should probably give him clot busting medicines, the same medicines we give patients with strokes and heart attacks. But this was about 15 years ago, and this was before, you know, there really was evidence-based guidelines for pulmonary embolism management. So just before we were about to give him the clot-busting medicines, a team of ICU doctors came down. They had a difference of opinion on how to manage that patient. And they ended up, you know, taking the patient from the ER to the ICU and saying, you know, well, we'll make this decision on whether or not we're going to give these clot-busters or not. So I basically assumed care of the patient before we could give them the clot busters. Mm-hmm. They never gave him the clot busters, and the patient died 5 hours after his arrival in the ICU. And so this became a quality and safety event at the university. And I ended up presenting, to the whole hospital house staff that case. And it was through that presentation that I got really interested in pulmonary embolism. And that's where I ended up doing a year of research, ended up publishing a protocol in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine for how emergency physicians should be assessing, determining the severity of disease for patients with pulmonary embolism, and then, you know, determining the optimal treatment strategy. So I definitely had an interest in pulmonary embolism. And so when I left Virginia, moved to Nashville, started working for just a busy community hospital. Anytime my colleagues would see patients with pulmonary embolism, they'd always come up and ask me, hey, what should I do here? But I was working one night late at the hospital, and woman presented, 30 years old, severe shortness of breath, also in shock. And so immediately I'm thinking, what would cause such a high respiratory distress and cause cardiovascular shock in a patient who's 30 years old? And I said, she's got to have a big pulmonary embolism. And so as it turned out, she had a huge clot sitting in her pulmonary artery, which for non-medical folks is how you get all of the blood out of your heart into your lungs. I was struck with that situation. And obviously I knew I needed to do something fast. And the woman was also 36 weeks pregnant. Wow. And so here I am making a decision that impacts not only the patient, but also her unborn child. And so I asked the nurses to go, you know, prepare the clot busting medicines while I did what 87% of physicians do when they have a clinical question, which is go to Google. And so I ran to the nurse's station, got on the computer, started searching for, and even though I'm a leading expert on this condition, I'm still wanting to double check, you know, what's the risk to a baby when I'm going to give these clot busting medicines, make sure that I'm not going to do harm from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find the information I was looking for. And the nurse yelled to me from the patient's room, "Dr. Fengler, I need you in here." And so I went running it back into the room. And the woman is about to, you know, her heart's about to stop right there in the ER. And so I went up to the patient and I said, "Ma'am, you're very sick. You have a large clot sitting between your heart and your lung. I'm worried that this could cause your heart to stop. I'm going to give you this medicine, which is a clot buster, to try to break up this clot and save your life." And she looked up at me and she says, "Well, what's the risk to my baby?" And I said, "Ma'am, I don't know, but if I don't save your life, then your baby's going to die also." Mm. That was a difficult situation. And I think that was the catalyst I needed to, you know, realize that gap. And everybody realizes that gap. Everybody experiences that gap. But it was that acute situation that just, you know, had enough of an impact on me that I was, you know, just there has to be a better way. And so that's, you know, why I started Evidence Care. A little bit further into the story, you know, you said kind of make that jump or you know, take that leap of faith. So for several years, you know, I was, you know, sort of developing the product myself and meeting with, you know, colleagues and, you know, healthcare operators in Nashville. I was very fortunate to be in Nashville, which is, you know, sort of epicenter of healthcare. And, you know, met my business partner, Jim, who, you know, is instrumental in Evidence Care wouldn't exist without Jim. And so him and I really hit it off and we said, we're going to be a team. We're going to do this. And so we got to the point a couple of years into that journey where we had raised some capital and we had actually started hiring full-time employees that were working for us while I was still working at the hospital, still working at the urgent care clinics that I had opened and was doing Evidence Care on nights and weekends. And we eventually reached this point where we were like, okay, are we going to do this or not? And, you know, we both just took that leap and said, you know, we'll never regret doing this. As a physician, my mindset was, hey, if I do this for a year or two and it completely flops, I can always go back to medicine. But, you know, with this thing that I have such a passion for, if I don't do this, then I'll regret, you know, 10, 20 years from now that I didn't, you know, go all in and commit everything I could to being successful. So, we both made that decision at the same time. He left his, job that he was at, you know, we both worked for about a year with no salary. And everything started from there.
And you know what? I love the vulnerability in what you've shared right now, Brian. And I think it's important for listeners to hear some of that, because you know, there's always like this mental gap that people have. Like, I'm here, I'm going to start a company, and bam, it's going to be super successful, and you know, we'll be fine. And you know, the fact of the matter is, like, as you pointed out, like you guys didn't take a salary for a year. You were hiring full time staff while you were working. And you know, I'm going to call this out because I saw this on your LinkedIn profile. Like, you're married with kids. So, you know, at that time to make that decision, you know, that's gotta be very scary, right? Cause as a provider, you're like, my job is to take care of, you know, my wife and my kids and have a roof over the house and food in their stomachs. And I'm sure you and your wife had a deep, long, many soup, you know, numerous conversations about, is this the right step? It sounds like she was very supportive, but you know, what were some of the concerns that were brought up maybe before you said yes to, like, hey, this can be a full-time thing. This needs to be a full-time thing. Like, what was probably like the biggest thing that held you back, before you and your wife said, no, we're going to do this?
Yeah. She is very supportive. And again, you know, wouldn't have been able to do this without her. I was actually very surprised by her response. And there was actually one conversation that we had one night that sort of led to the decision. And I sort of brought up the topic, and I was like, worried, because I was like, oh, how's this going to go? And her response was, you know, what's taking you so long? Like, I've been waiting for 6 months for you to come to me with this conversation. Cause she obviously saw, you know, working full time at the hospital, working at the urgent cares, doing evidence care, and so that was definitely the words that I needed to hear, to go all in, and you know, I mean, I have to admit to other entrepreneurs on the phone, I mean, it's a lot of stress, you know, as you mentioned, you know, a year without any salary, I mean, there's probably been a dozen times. Over the last 7 or 8 years where we didn't think we were going to make it as a company. You know, as an early startup company, you know, when we started this thing, I thought raising $1 million would be more than we would ever need, you know, to start a company. And, you know, 8 years later, you know, we've now raised 20 times that.
Wow.
As a growing company, and now with 40 employees. And so, I mean, we've had those situations where, you know, we had a week's worth of working capital in the bank account, and we had to figure out, you know, okay, we have full-time employees, their families are dependent upon us, you know, we need to make this happen, and we need to, figure out. And, you know, we've been very fortunate, you know, with the network of, investors and advisors that we've, you know, been able to pull together, you know, very fortunate, you know, that the product has shown the clinical and financial benefits that it has, which has now allowed us over the last few years to have strategic, you know, health systems mm-hmm. become major investors in the company, major users and promoters of the product. And so now, you know, that ball that we were pushing up the hill for so many years, you know, is now rolling down the hill and picking up steam.
Excellent.
And, you know, it's crazy. I mean, I think sometimes about how, you know, our first $1 million raised, you know, took us, you know, probably a year and a half and hundreds of meetings, with investors, with, you know, advisors, with colleagues, and raising money from friends and family, you know, with $10,000 checks and $25,000 checks, And now we have health systems that are investing millions of dollars, and because, you know, they're now seeing the growth of the company and the opportunity, and it's you know, I'm very grateful for how things have gone. And you know, in retrospect, would I've loved it to have been easier? Sure. But we are here where we are, and I love where we are. And I guess at the end of all that, I wouldn't want to change anything, because it led us to where we are today.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you've described it as, you know, the roller coaster that it has been. But at the end, like you've really been able to show that determination, perseverance, and a strong support system are critical for any medical entrepreneur to move into their space. You know, you mentioned your wife, you mentioned your business partner. Is there anyone else that you would like to acknowledge on the show for, you know, really being instrumental in helping you achieve the success that you've been able to achieve thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a few people come to mind. So there's a dear friend. His name is Bill Evans. And he passed away a few years ago, but Bill was beloved in Nashville. Everybody in the healthcare community in Nashville knew Bill Evans. I had the good fortune of when we moved to Nashville, Bill lived three houses down from us. And so just became really good friends with Bill personally. And before Evidence Care even existed, and Bill was the first person that I showed Evidence Care to. And when I showed it to him, he was just blown away. And having been in the healthcare industry for at that point, 30, 40 years, you know, his opinion had a lot of, you know, weight. And he said, "Brian, you got something here." And Bill was instrumental in starting to build that network, because, you know, he introduced me to folks that then introduced me to more folks, and everything started with Bill's confidence in me, confidence in the product, mm-hmm. and helping to then build that network. Then Jim came along, and as I mentioned, you know, the company wouldn't exist without Jim. Just the grit and the persistence and the ability to network and build relationships. He taught me so much about that along the way. So him and I, you know, technically co-founded the company, and, you know, we're sort of have been work spouses now for this last 7-8 years as we spend so much time together. Every day working, you know, traveling, conferences, and so Evidence Care wouldn't exist without Jim. And then the last one I'll mention, and I could mention a dozen folks, but would be, Bo Bartholomew, our CEO. So I was the original CEO of the company, and before COVID had even happened, Jim and I'd started been having conversations around the fact that, we were where we were at that point, and we were growing and we were successful, but we both had vision and aspiration for Evidence Care being, you know, a 100 times bigger company than we were, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we recognized, I'm a physician, no formal business training. Jim's a sales guy, best relationship builder and networker I know. But neither one of us had formal business experience. And we started Evidence Care at our kitchen tables in coffee shops.
Yes.
And at that point, we'd gotten to the point where, we had raised millions of dollars, had, 20 employees. And we said, there are people with specific skill sets that take companies from where we are and take them where they want to go. And so that's when we went out and we did a search. And we were so fortunate to bring Bo onto the team. And, so Bo's been CEO for two and a half years now. We have grown multiple times over now over the last 2 to 3 years off of Bo's leadership, his processes, every aspect of the company when he came in, whether it's product or implementations or client success or sales or marketing or finance. He brought in that leadership to go deep into every one of those areas and build our processes so that we could scale as a company. And the last piece would be culture. I think I didn't have as much of an appreciation for how important culture was, but I now see on the other side of it, we have the best culture of any company we come across. Our team, every one of our team members, are rock stars. We all love working together, and just the way that then amplifies our opportunity to execute and continue to grow and scale the business, mm-hmm. is just amazing. And in this era now where it's so easy coming out, you know, everybody saw it out coming out of COVID, you know, everybody's switching jobs, bouncing around, trying to find the highest pay, staying there for 6 months and then going somewhere else. We've been able to retain our team, and everybody's excited and loves our mission at Evidence Care and is in it for the long haul. And that all has been a part of Bo's leadership and his commitment to building culture of the company.
I think it's fantastic when individuals that are founders and starters of companies realize that bringing in people with diverse backgrounds help the company grow. And I say that not, you know, towards you directly, Brian, but like, yeah. I have seen way, including myself, I have seen way too many clinicians that say, I've had this idea, it's going to be a game changer, and they pour their blood, sweat, and tears into it. But as an individual, you're limited in terms of the capacity that you're able to further the organization, right? You need the Bows, you need Jims, you need other people that have expertise in other areas, and working and letting them run their business is phenomenal. So I'm glad that you've had that experience. I'm glad that you shared that on the show, right? Because I know that too many times people have a hard time letting go of control. Like, this is my baby. I started it. You know, I know where it's going to go, but they can't create the culture because they've not done it themselves. They can't do sales because they've not done it themselves. And allowing the better person to come in and say, look, you handled this and I'll take care of this. I think that that's great. And the success that I'm hearing from Evidence Care is evident based on this anecdote, which I think is phenomenal. You know, Brian, you've mentioned that your staff has grown now, I think 40 plus, right? And you've gotten several, you know, good VPs, directors, and obviously, you know, your CEO. You know, when you come across individuals through conversations, right? When you're looking at somebody and you're like, you know, our team is still growing. Like, we need to find great people. And I'm sure you get thousands of resumes a week, and you know, you and your HR staff are probably pouring through that. You know, what, there are some things that speak to you in that conversation where you are like, we need to find a place for this person in our company because he or she has A, B, and C. Like, what are those three qualities that you or others on your company look for in conversations with people where you're like, you know, we can't teach this. You can't find this in on a resume, right? But you have something that we need. What are those three things that really speak to you when you think about hiring somebody or even promoting somebody from within to higher level?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny you mentioned this because, you know, this we put processes into our hiring and it sounds a little maybe hokey or whatever, but we actually started that process with, do these people match our company values? We actually grade all of our employees based on our company values. And, you know, we have had let some people go over the last few years because they didn't meet all of those values that we as an organization hold dear to us. And just to talk about those real quick. So grit, respect, integrity, teamwork, innovation, and then the last one, fun. And so we actually look at all of our employees on a quarterly basis and, you know, we started this 10 quarters ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it required more work the first few times we did it, but now we're at the point where, we have a rock solid team and we know that all of them fulfill our values. And we talk about our values every week, every Friday. You know, we have a town hall meeting, you know, we are now very much in this post-COVID era. Half of our employees are dispersed around the country.
Okay.
Half of them are in Nashville. But, you know, we bring the team together every Friday for a town hall, you know, Zoom meeting, and we do value shout outs. And every employee has the opportunity to call out another team member and say, you know, hey, I want to call out Johnny, because, you know, they acted with integrity this week when we had to have this hard conversation with a client. I want to call out, you know, Susie for fun because, you know, she did something, you know, and so we constantly reinforce that and it builds that bond and it allows everybody to recognize that we're all sharing the same values, But then when we go back to that hiring process and we're evaluating candidates, we're seeing how do they fit into our team for sure? How do they fit in? Do they have the skill set that we need them to have in order to fulfill what we're hiring them for? But a huge piece of it is, do they match our values? Because that's the only way that they're going to be successful within our organization is if they live by those same values.
I'm so glad that you brought this into the field here right now, Brian. I find that, you know, with the people that I work with, predominantly healthcare professionals and executives that are looking to move up in their career, they don't ever consider that as, you know, as part of a synergistic, you know, approach. They don't think about, listen, you have a vice president role that's open in your company, right? Here are the responsibilities. Oh, I've done half of these and I can certainly do the rest. And then they apply. And they do zero research to understand what makes your company different from the next health IT company. And I think it's critical that, you know, what you just said should resonate in the ears and the minds of the listeners today, is that understanding how the organization, you know, what they value, and being able to match those in some level, right? Like if you are not super extroverted, but you can still have fun in an introverted way and build relationships, yeah. I think that's key. So I'm glad to hear from both a recruitment perspective is how you approach and how you filter through candidates that would be a good fit. But I love the retention portion of that. I mean, having individuals call each other out for the positives that they see is, it's not as common as you'd think, Brian, I'll be honest with you. You know, maybe once a quarter, like they have like this opportunity where people can, you know, throw a name in the ring. But if you guys are doing it that frequently, like I can understand why your retention rates are as high as they are. And kudos to you and Evidence Care for that as well. I want you to know that.
Thank you. Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, you have folks that are looking to advance their career. And I think sometimes they might always think, I need another certification. I need a degree. I need a, and it comes down to those interpersonal relationships. And as you mentioned, when they're going to look at an organization, like know the mission of the organization, the vision, the values, make sure you're mentioning how you resonate with those things, because that's going to let that organization know that number one, you care enough to know what is important to them. Mm-hmm. But number two, that you see yourself aligning with those, and then that you're going to be a great team member.
I love that. Brian, when you think about your own leadership journey, right, you've had a lot of experience and exposure to both, you know, situations and, you know, processes and people that have really helped you kind of expand your mind and build new skill sets. Today, you know, even as a leader, you know, we all go and find a resource that we think is pretty helpful for us today, right? Like I watch a lot of Gary Vee. I watch a lot of, you know, Brian Tracy. Reading used to be a passion. Now my attention span is so short. It's always on TikTok or YouTube reels and stories, and I'll just kind of grab it from there. But, you know, what is something that's either sitting on your nightstand today, or, you know, a video that you've kind of like been watching over and over again, and you're recommending to people to help them with their leadership skills and development as well?
Yeah. I mean, the single recommendation that I could make would be a book called Traction. Yes. And, you know, Bo actually brought this into the company when he came on. And what Traction is it's actually a framework for entrepreneurs to grow a company. Mm-hmm. And it is not rocket science. It is basic, you know, business 101. But I think sometimes people forget all of that. And what Traction is its processes for how to grow a company the right way. An example of it is, you know, it starts with where do you want to be in 10 years as a company, and actually getting in the room and having the hard discussions, because you'd be amazed when you get a whole company in the room, how people's opinions may differ. And so where are we going to be 10 years from now? And not only from who we are in the marketplace, but even down to what is our revenue going to be? What is our profitability? What's our headcount on employees going to be? And then you do the same thing for 3 years. And then you do the same thing for 1 year. And then you do it every quarter. And so what happens every quarter is we review our 10-year goal, our 3-year goal, our 1-year goal. And then we say, what are the rocks that we need to accomplish this quarter to move us to where we want to be in a year, 3 years, and 10 years? And by rocks, I mean, most people probably get it, but just in case, there's sand all around us. The sand is emails, messages, Slack, Teams. You could literally, you know, consume a whole day, 5 days a week of just answering emails and okay, well, you take a bottle, you fill it up with sand, and then you try to put some marbles in it. There's no room for the rocks. The rocks are the important things. And so you put the rocks in first, then the marbles, then the sand, you fit everything in there. And so we as a company, every employee has rocks every quarter. And every employee, senior leadership, all the way down to, you know, our administrative staff or directors, everybody has a rock. And most people have 2, 3, 4 rocks every quarter. We put them up on the wall in the office. And so everybody knows, all 40 employees, what is of primary importance to every employee for that next 3 months. And you actually have permission, if you get asked to do something, to say, hey, I don't know if I have time to do that because I'm focusing on my rocks. And the whole goal is at the end of the quarter that you have 40 employees that have all executed 2, 3, 4 rocks or milestones that we've determined are important for moving the business forward. And since we put this process in place 2 years ago, I mean, obviously the company has scaled, we've grown revenue, sales, product development, because we are doing the important things every quarter that are most important for growing and scaling the business. And that's where we're focused, and that's where our priorities are. And then the next quarter, we reevaluate and redetermine the next set of priorities. And it always keeps us, you know, on task and focused and making sure we're doing the right things to grow the business.
That's, I love this, Brian. This is phenomenal. And the insights into how your company operates really is beneficial, because I think that many companies today are struggling to figure out what is permissible, right? There are still many organizations today that operate in that, you know, top-down mentality, like this is what we told you to do. But giving your employees permission to say no, that's very rare. So I can see, again, so many things, you know, coming from a talent acquisition background. I'm like, wow, your retention numbers are high. I wonder why. Now I know. Brian, it's I know we're getting close to the end of our recording, but I really just want to, you know, take the time and appreciate all of the pearls of wisdom and a lot of the great things that Evidence Care has been able to do in partnership with so many other clients. You know, for, you know, if people are just tuning in, or they've tuned out for the majority of this, but you want them to walk away knowing something that maybe we haven't talked about yet, like, what would that one piece of advice be to the listeners today that are either looking to start a company or move up on, in a career perspective, or take on a leadership role? Like, what is that one piece of advice that you'd want people to say, hey, if you get nothing out of this conversation that Iqbal and Brian had, just remember this.
That's a tough one. I guess I would say, no matter what industry you're in, you know, obviously there's lots of opportunities in healthcare, but across all industries, no industry is mature. Every industry is evolving. And so there are so many opportunities, especially when we talk digital and, innovation from an IT perspective. And so if you have that passion for something, you have that expertise, you recognize that gap, you see that there's an opportunity, you got to go for it. You know, you got to go all in. And, the first few years, as I mentioned in my origin story, I mean, I was still working at the hospital. I was still working at the urgent care. I was doing evidence care on nights and weekends. So, you know, I didn't just go, you know, jump in, you know, from day one. Go down that path and start to come up with those ideas. These days, there are so many incubators for every industry around the country where you can go and you can meet with advisors, meet with business leaders, do a month or a 3 month incubation where they help you grow your business model and your idea and meet with potential investors. And so there are so many opportunities today to get that idea off the ground and determine if it's something that you're going to push forward with.
Inspiring words, Brian. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so happy that you were able to share with us all the great things that Evidence Care is doing. Certainly wishing you and your team much success in the second half of 2023, and looking forward to seeing you and your company continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.